The following episode of The Movie Palace was recorded live at the British Film Institute on the 18th of August, 2018. Welcome back to The Movie Palace. I'm your host, as ever, Carl Sweeney, and thank you for joining me for this, which is a very, very special episode indeed, because we're in London, aren't we? I'm joined by not one special guest, not two, but three. You know, a group I like to think of really as The Movie Palace Massive, I would say, because these are the first three guests we ever had on the podcast. So let me say hello, first of all, to Kelechi Ihanyolo. Hi, Kelechi.
Hi, Carl. How you doing?
Yeah, really well, thanks. And we're also joined by Clara Cook. Hi, Clara.
Hi, Carl.
And last, but by no means least, the man himself, Nathan Drake. How are you doing, Nathan?
I'm very well, thank you, Carl. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, absolutely, my pleasure. Now, let me just explain. We're in London, like I said. We're at the British Film Institute. Not in the bar, but close to the bar. We've got drinks, that's the main thing. And we're here today. We've just seen... Well, three of us have just seen. We've just watched Mildred Pierce starring Joan Crawford, because the BFI is currently running a Joan Crawford season. So myself, Kelechi and Nathan have watched the film. Clara, you've just joined us just afterwards, haven't you? You've been busy today, haven't you?
Yeah, so I watched it last week on Amazon, streamed on Amazon, basically. So, but it's not the first time I've seen it. It's like the second time I've seen it, but I hadn't seen it for years, so it was quite exciting.
But Kelechi, am I right in thinking this was the first time you'd ever seen the film? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's been on my wish list for a long, long time. I'm more familiar with the HBO series starring Kate Winslet. So I managed to mind myself what the plot line and how that story evolved. But as soon as you mentioned that there was a Joan Crawford season and Mildred Pierce was one of those key films, I kind of had to jump at the chance and say, well, this has got me clearing off my wish list and getting the chance to see it.
Yeah, and Nathan, this was the first time for you, is that right?
Yeah, on my wish list. And if you invite me to any kind of cinema to watch any kind of film, I'm usually there. So, it was a great experience.
Yeah, well, as you say, this is a great cinema. And let's talk a bit about the venue, because the British Film Institute, I mean, if anyone listening ever gets the chance to come down here and hasn't been before, I mean, I'd really recommend it. I've only been here a few times. I've actually had a busy week, BFI-wise, because I was down in London for a few days earlier in the week, and I managed to come and see Brief Encounter and another Joan Crawford film, Mannequin. So now it's three times in like 5 days or something. But this is a great place to see films, I think. Clara, what's your experience with the BFI? Are you kind of a regular here? Or?
Yeah, so I have a long history of the BFI. I actually came to the BFI first when I was a kid, because my parents really like classic cinema, so they took me here as a child. And it's actually gone through a lot of renovations in recent years. It's actually quite a different building than it used to be, and it's actually better now, I think, with the Media Tech, which is a sort of library where you can sit and watch lots of clips from different parts of the BFI collection. And it's got like lots of free space to sit where we're sitting right now. And they really expanded their like sort of program of events and films. So you can see talks here as well now. And the films just seem a lot more varied than they used to be. So there's lots more foreign films, but also classics like, you know, Mildred Pierce.
Yeah, and the place just seems to have a really kind of relaxed, kind of serious but welcoming vibe, I find anyway. And Kelechi, you've been here, of course, in the past. And you said you were at a nice event not too long ago, didn't you?
Yes, that's correct. There was a Women in Film event about 2 months ago, and it was about a celebration of women filmmakers, women writers, screenwriters, and just anyone that's in the industry to give a kind of a pep talk to help motivate young aspiring writers like myself and anyone who's just taken a keen interest into the industry and how to bring into it. And as Clara was saying about renovation, I remember what it used to look like. So being back, my journey was kind of on and off, you know, before the renovation. But it was when I came to the Women in Film event, I actually really took notice of the renovation. And as Clara, and I 100% agree with Clara, it's absolutely fantastic. It's a real celebration of film. And it's great to have that kind of a permanent residence of, you know, that you can come here and passionately talk about film, communicate film. The staff is amazing and they have amazing shop, which you can get lost in with their books and their Criterion collection.
Yeah, I think the shop's really good too. I mean, what would you say, Nathan? Would you echo all that? I mean, I know you're not a Londoner exactly. You're from slightly further south, aren't you?
Yeah.
Take it away.
Yes, I'm from down south, which is about an hour and a half away. So London's kind of like the big Emerald City. So the BFI is like kind of something I go past and something like I delve into, but I've never actually seen a film here until today. Yeah, and like you said, like it really captures like the sense of like how great film is and how film can like unite you. Even like the audience in the crowd today was very united in their love for this film in particular. And there's just some of the events that are coming up. I just saw a poster for The Shining they're going to do, so I'm just really going to try to get up there, because any opportunity to see that again on the big screen would be great. But yeah, definitely like you can like really like kind of feel the passion here for, you know, for film.
I mean, as regards to Shining, listeners, on Nathan's right arm is a terrifying image of Jack Nicholson from The Shining. Nathan, I mean, I don't know how your wife can look at that, to be honest.
Well, my wife has to look at something equally terrifying without even like lowering her gaze to my arms. So she's used to those horrifying images throughout our marriage. Yeah, like as a kind of struggling writer myself, frustrated with the world, like Jack Torrance really echoes like, you know, my personality. But enough about me, let's talk about Mildred.
Well, I'll tell you what, before we talk about Mildred, let me just kind of build on what you were saying before, because yeah, this is a great place to actually watch the film, and it starts from when you walk towards the screening room, I think, because you go past all sorts of great posters and so on. It really gets you into it, and then when you enter the cinema, they give you, or you can get like notes about the film, can't you, Kelechi? And I don't know, I just think every cinema should do this. You know, you should be able to walk into like a screening of like the Emoji Movie or something and get like a double page fact sheet, shouldn't you? But,
it's not right, 2 pages.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can stretch 2 pages. It might be an emoji itself.
Yeah, but I think it's a great little service, and you know, just a very nice like auditorium we've just sat in, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. I mean, it is, as I mentioned before, a celebration of film, and it's one of the unique perks. Like, you feel like you're in a special place. Like, if you go to any other chain cinema, you won't have that kind of experience. You're just like, here's your ticket, there's your popcorn, go straight in and just watch the film. And it's almost like a passive experience. Whereas the BFI, even, you know, if you walk 5 minutes around from here, it's the BFI IMAX. Yeah. You know, they always treat you almost like, you know, you're special, and they really welcome you into that world, because as their mantra is, you know, cinema is for everybody, and it's for, you know, for you to engage in, to you to experience things for the first thing for a new time. You know, like today, first time watching Mildred Pierce, which was fantastic, and it's just a real love. You can just feel that there's a real culture and love for film, and you don't get that often. And that should be just treasured for the end of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you, Nathan, one of the things I really like here, which is not the case in most places, is how quickly we were into the film, really. We watched about 5 minutes of trailers, didn't we? And then we were away. And normally, what's any world, what you'd expect, 25 minutes or something? And no, that was very refreshing, wasn't it?
It was probably the best experience of the cinema I've had in many, many years. I like a good curtain. Yeah. The curtain opens up. All the seats are clean.
Yeah.
Everyone's really like appreciative of what they're seeing. You know, we haven't got anyone late coming in. We haven't got any adverts. There's nothing advertising the BFI that we're sitting in. They know their audience already.
even just the back on, even just on the seating, like on the back of the seat, there's like nameplates, and obviously I think they're either, I don't know how the process works, but that's, I always like that. It's a nice little touch because it's like, yeah, it's named after somebody famous or somebody connected with film gets a nameplate on the seat. So again, that's a nice little touch from the BFI.
Totally. And Clara, I don't want you to get left out. I know you haven't been with us today, but I imagine you kind of echo kind of the sentiment, I suppose, from the films you have seen here.
Yeah, I think that also there's that feeling that the audience is filled with people who really came to see this particular film. Whereas I know you get blockbusters, you get people who, you know, they buy a ticket obviously to see the film, but there's a lot of people who are like, what should we do on a Saturday night? Let's go see the latest, like, you know, film at the Cineworld. Whereas this, I really feel like people have actually picked this deliberate film, and it comes in a sort of series of films maybe centered around that actor or that actress or that that director. Also as well, nobody's eating dinner or lunch.
Yeah, there's no food in there. Yeah.
And I really hate it when people like pick out some huge, like they carry like sushi into the cinema and they eat sushi right behind you, and it's like, you know, stop chewing and smacking and crackling and everything. I like the fact that this, I really get to concentrate on the film here.
Yeah, totally. I mean, at the minute they've got this Joan Crawford season on, which is a really great kind of series. So we've watched Mildred Pierce, but they're showing all sorts of stuff. I mean, when this podcast goes out, I think the season will still be on. So if anyone gets the chance, I definitely recommend coming down. They're showing stuff like, you know, Johnny Guitar and The Women and Grand Hotel, The Bride Wore Red and so on. I think Mildred Pierce, you know, is Joan Crawford's Oscar-winning role. A great showcase for her, of course. But Nathan, I mean, they showed that kind of clip reel, didn't they, of Joan Crawford films before the film started, and I think you got a real sense, didn't you, about, like, you know, the event and about how great kind of she was just from that kind of short trailer. I think
it really for me, I've only seen like a handful of Joan Crawford films, but what it does is kind of like clarify her impact on film and film history. You had like these quotes from like Roger Ebert, who said, you know, like a phenomenal actress or something along those lines. And someone else said, what's a really good one was, Joan Crawford became a star because she wanted to become a star.
Yeah.
So you kind of, that's, you kind of got that power of this kind of this woman, which, you know, was hard to do, you know, back in the 40s, where it could easily become like a housewife role or something like that. But this is a great role for her. This is, you know, this, like you said, it nabbed her Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a fantastic performance and real, like, if you were to show one film really to describe Joan Crawford, maybe this would be the one.
Yeah, and Clara, I know when we spoke, I think it was for the very first episode we did, we were talking about favourite female stars and so on. I believe you mentioned Joan Crawford. So, I mean, are you a fan, and what do you think it is about her that's so kind of, like, distinctive, or what kind of endures about her? I don't know.
It's interesting because, actually, just before we started recording, Kelechi mentioned this as well, which is that, especially Mildred Pierce, she's a bit of an anti-hero, and I always feel that Joan Crawford plays those kinds of characters, these sort of women who are ambitious, very strong, stand up for themselves, and also are okay without being liked. You know, they're not necessarily likable women, which I think, especially in this era, is an interesting character to play, because I think most women in films of like the 1930s and 40s are supposed to be honourable, good characters. And I also think it's interesting, Joan Crawford really, she originally started her career in the silent era, if I'm right. Yeah. And she's got a real presence, like her face. I know you shouldn't, her face isn't really like her fault or her responsibility, I suppose. She just lucks out with that face. But she's very, very beautiful. And she's also got this, real sort of screen presence, so like these big dark eyes, and she's got a very dramatic face, very dramatic way of acting. And she can sort of say a lot with just one expression.
Yeah, very expressive, I think. And I mean, Kelechi, how about you? How did that kind of clip reel we saw before the film kind of grab you as well?
It was incredible. I mean, to be honest, you know, I've got gaps in my cinema wish list, so I need to like cover more Joan Crawford films. But seeing that reel and just see, I didn't have to watch Mildred Pierce. I could have just watched that clip reel, and it's like, wow, that is an incredible actress, an incredible body of work that she's done. And as I was mentioning to Clara off before we started recording, you know, the whole idea about gender stereotypes and how in that period of time where I guess women were not only just looked as honourable, but just expected to be just the housewife, you know, look after the kids, not have that kind of a sense of autonomy at all. And here is, in, I mean, we'll sure we'll talk about it more in our discussion about Mildred Pierce, but the whole idea is that she has this control. It's like, okay, I'm going through a rough patch. I'm getting myself out of this rough patch, and I'm going to try and do the best for my kids. And I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm just going to go and strive my way. And that's, you know, for me, that's quite inspiring. And to see it take place in that time period. I mean, this film was made in 1945. That's, it's almost unheard of when you think about most films in that decade where, you know, I don't know, Double Indemnity, those kind of film noir aspects where, you know, women are looked at as the sort of femme fatale, you know, the kind of shady but mysterious, but they're kind of almost at the sidekick level, you know, they kind of reinforce the plot but not necessarily, you know, I guess giving the attention except for the beauty and the looks. And here is Joan Crawford just kind of owning every single scene that she is in, and I thought that's incredibly unique. So I think after this I'll definitely be catching some more Joan Crawford stuff.
Yeah, let's think about the film as a whole then. And I know it's tough for you too because you've only literally just seen it. So we'll start with Clara and I guess. I mean, for me, this is a film I've seen a few times. I really like it. And it's a strange film in some ways because, it, you know, it starts off with kind of a noir murder scenario, doesn't it? It kind of doubles back to become this melodrama, and then the noir elements keep kind of coming in and out. But I think it manages that kind of blend really well. For me, this time, the audience reaction is what reinforced to me how funny the film is, and that's not something I'd really thought about before, but there's something about being in the cinema with people around you laughing at like a one-liner or a quip or something that really is different to watching something at home on Netflix or a DVD or whatever. But overall, a great film, I think. Is it a great film, Clara? Is it that good? Or is it very good? You know, how good is it?
I think it's a great film. I think it's a great film because, like I said, the main character isn't actually that likable. In fact, no one's really that likable in the film. But at the same time, you do kind of respect her and you do kind of want her to succeed. But at the same time, she sacrifices personal relationships for the pursuit of, you know, success and money. But also, I feel like it's a great film because there are characters in it like that are really unlikable but also really funny. Like Wally, that you're mentioning, that's some really good one-liners. Wally has some really good one-liners. But at the same time, I was like, dude, you're like harassing this woman, you know? This is really unpleasant. But he's also really funny. And you also kind of also want him to kind of succeed a little bit as well, just because no matter what happens to him, he sort of picks himself up and goes on forward. I also liked it because of the music. I just thought the music was ridiculous. It's the most dramatic, romantic music that you will ever hear. You know, you think you're going into like Gone with the Wind in the beginning because the music's so dramatic. It's a completely different type of film. So, yeah, I think it's really good, yeah.
Yeah, Max Steiner's score, you're right, it definitely like underlines and underscores all the action that's going on. I mean, in terms of funny characters, I think Eve Arden, who plays Ida, is really funny as well. I think she comes close to stealing the show at times, you know. Mr. Drake, what do you reckon? Because, I mean, did this match kind of what you expected going in? Because I know you'd seen the miniseries with Kate Winslet, hadn't you?
Yes.
I mean, the film's quite different in some respects, but, I mean, yeah, how did you find it?
Yeah, this was great. This was like a lot of melodrama. It's got those like noir elements, like you said, which I love. It's got the same kind of. I found it very similar to like kind of Casablanca in terms of like the quick fire kind of dialogue, quick fire like quips. Like you said, there's what I like about the film as well. Like the women here are the devious ones in this film, and the men seem to be like. The men are just either like ignorant or stupid to the point where, and you said, well, we've got another noir element is the femme fatale, and it's not Joan Crawford in this, it's Vida. She becomes a femme fatale by the end of it, she's fully fledged. So it's really interesting that you kind of see the, yeah, like it kind of dips in, like we said, it dips into noir, but you wouldn't call it noir, it wouldn't be maybe classed as that if you were to kind of put it into a genre. Yeah. But there's some great characters in it. I even like the little policeman on the pier scene at the start when he says, "I don't want to get wet." It's only the other. It's a great way to talk someone down from a suicide.
Yeah.
And he doesn't pop up again, but yeah, it's some great delivery, and it's it's Michael Curtiz again.
Yeah.
Who's done some great films.
Well, yeah, because you mentioned Casablanca, and Curtiz obviously directed that, and lots of stuff, really. Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I think The Adventures of Robin Hood, and all sorts, really. So, I mean, Kelechi, I know we kind of touched on it before. It sounds like you got on well with this film, but overall thoughts on it as a film, I mean, did it conform to your expectations? Did it blow you away?
It was certainly different. I mean, it's not normally a film that I always kind of naturally gravitate to. You know, if you're thinking about, okay, if you're coming home from work, what film do I pop on? Like, it's probably Mildred Pierce is not the film you would do. But you know, in terms of just its quality, it was definitely inspirational. You know, it was definitely watchable. As Nate was talking about, you know, great sort of characters that were there that just kept it moving and plodding along. Melodramatic, you know, as you would expect from a 1940s film, questionable morals and probably outdated statements. You know, we're talking about the policeman on the pier saying, you know, talking Mildred out of suicide, but you know, also kind of mansplaining and not kind of like, I don't want to get wet. It's like, dude, this woman is nearly is about to commit suicide. You could have just toned it down, not think about your own self, actually help her out. You know, it's interesting about the sort of the film. You know, I know we're talking about it not quite being a film noir, but I think there's even thinking about it as like similar to Casablanca. The opening, I don't know if everyone felt this, but it kind of reminded me of Citizen Kane, and the way Monty died, and whispering Mildred, obviously in Citizen Kane it was Rosebud, and I thought that was quite a nice kind of, you know, I can't remember what year was Citizen Kane, but I thought just being watching that was kind of a nice sort of kind of throwback and nice connection to it. But in terms of expectations, I think it sort of delivered everything that I would expect because of how good it is. Like, it stood the test of time for a reason. There's a reason why it's won a Joan Crawford's best. She won an Oscar for it. So you don't win an Oscar for being crap. you may do, but you know, on this occasion, she totally owns that role, and that was something that I gravitate towards. You know, and her and the actress who played Vida, and Blythe. You know, I thought they were superb through that.
Yeah. Totally. I think it's really interesting you mentioned Citizen Kane, because I think that's a really good point, because like Citizen Kane sets up the mystery of Rosebud, and I suppose here the mystery is like, what exactly did happen to Monty?
Yeah.
And we think it's going to be one solution, and it turns out to be something slightly different, doesn't it? We just got a bit of a PA announcement there. Okay. I think for me, Clara, one aspect of this film I really like is the kind of self-made Mildred that we see. You know, she sets up, she becomes kind of an accomplished waitress quite quickly. She sets up her own business. The business kind of takes off. So you got this kind of rags to riches story. It just sort of goes rags to riches back to rags, doesn't it, in a certain sense. But I really like that aspect of the film. I think Crawford's really good at playing this kind of tenacious, kind of determined woman, isn't she?
Yeah, and watching it this time, I really admired the fact that she learned the restaurant business through being a waitress. She's very smart, she's very quick to learn, she's business savvy, she's very determined. Even when people are telling her, you can't do this, it's not going to work, she sort of believes that she can, and she believes it is going to work, and just goes ahead and does it and succeeds. I thought it was interesting as well, because it also addresses the idea that what kind of job you do defines your social status, especially in the US. And in the US, there isn't like the same sort of like kind of class system that there is in the UK, which it, like, you know, depends on where you were born, like, were you born into a working class family? They don't really have that same sort of class system in the US. Class system is much more defined around money and how much money you've made and what kind of job you do. So I thought it was interesting that she's constantly being defined by the fact that she was once a waitress, and that like her parents obviously were working class Americans, Even the fact that her own daughter throws it back in her face, you know, you run restaurants, you cook for a living. So it's this idea that you can't really escape it. And Monty somehow has more status, despite the fact that Monty is, I mean, let's not be around the bush. Monty is a complete wastrel. He's a complete layabout.
Scoundrel.
Monty does nothing. You know, and like halfway through it, like my husband, when I was watching it, he turned to me and said, "Why doesn't Monty get a job?" I'm like, "Because he's an idiot." But Monty is, you know, comes from sort of like, I guess, gentry or something, or some rich family or whatever. So it's this idea that no matter how hard Mildred works, she can't escape the shame of having been poor. And although she may not feel it, her daughter feels it. Her daughter wants to escape from it. So,
yeah, I guess let's talk about her daughter a bit more then. Vida, played by Anne Blythe, like you said, Kelechi. And I don't know if you guys know, but it was actually Anne Blythe's 90th birthday, like a couple of days ago, I saw online. So she's still, as of recording, you know, still very much alive and kicking. And this is a great role for her, I think. I think Vida's one of the film's kind of most distinctive, you know, features, really. And the kind of weird relationship between between Mildred and Vida is kind of quite electric, I think. Like, there's that scene where Vida has kind of an outburst on her on the stairs. She kind of slaps Mildred and so on. And all that kind of stuff packed a real punch, I thought. What do you reckon, Nate?
Yeah, I completely agree. It's definitely like the kind of the strongest relationship throughout the whole film. Even from like right from the off when Vida like kind of throws Mildred's dress kind of back into her face. She's been, we know she's been baking like kind of pies and selling them to neighbours to justify the cost of this dress. Yeah. Obviously at great expense, but this like kind of stuck up spoiled brat, and that's all she kind of, that's all she is at that stage, just doesn't appreciate anything. And you know, she even like when she gives the she finds Mildred's uniform and gives it to the maid, and there's all these bits throughout, and she gets worse as it goes on. And it's a great role. It must be up there with like kind of the best like kind of child performances. I'm not sure how old she was at the time of filming, but I gather she was quite young. I would have thought quite young, but it's definitely like such a meaty role, and she carries it with such kind of disdain. This kind of life that, you know, she's got no right to you know, look down at anyone. She's been brought into wealth. Or what, you know, what she thinks she has. She has everything. Mildred sacrifices everything for her, but still, it's not good enough for poor Vader. Vida, sorry, I keep saying Vader, like I'm like Darth. Yeah. Too many.
No,
should be
Darth Vader. Like, yeah.
There are definitely some comparisons we could tease out there if we wanted to. I mean, we could probably do the maths. If she's 90 now in August 2018, how old would she have been in 1945? I don't know. Much younger, definitely.
Born in 1928. Then. She born in 1928. Should have been
17.
17.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good performance.
No, I think very accomplished performance. Would you agree, Kelechi?
Absolutely. You know, I don't want to kind of go it down on the looks of it, of her, but there's part of her facial features that remind me of Judy Garland. But this is kind of almost like, if Judy Garland, you know, forget Toto and all, and the Land of Oz, she ended up on the other side of the tracks, and not being completely appreciative of her of where she's come from, and I think the sad reality of her character is, as Nate was talking about, is, you know, how ungrateful. Her, you know, not recognizing what Mildred has done to sacrifice to get her into that position. I mean, Mildred is working, you know, at that time working in restaurants to learn the business. She opens up restaurants. She opens up a chain of restaurants. Like that's how incredible like what she's done. And even her husband, just thinking, what's his name? Bert. So even he comes around to understand who she is as a character. Like, you know, I didn't believe you could do this, but now you can. I'm going to grant you your divorce and you can move on with your life. And there just seems to be this, it's almost like an extreme temper tantrum from Vida. It's like an extreme temper tantrum that she's just continuously acting out, and no matter what Mildred does, it will never satisfy her, because she wants to be in that socialite debutante kind of elite where she can marry somebody into a rich family and con them out of money, and which is what happened, where she on her birthday, she gets a nice car. She deceives her mother, saying that, you know, oh yeah, there's rumors that she's going to get married. Too bad, got married already. And then she fakes that she has a baby. she was pregnant and conned him out of £10,000 with the help of Wally. And, you know, there is no morals. And, you know, it adds a kind of interesting dramatic beat or sort of a balance between Joan Crawford's Mildred, who is this, you know, not quite the perfect, you know, I guess not quite the perfect woman in a sense, but is trying her best to do the right thing. And then you hear somebody who's almost the antithesis of that. So, you know, it's incredible to kind of see that as a strong dynamic and have that, you know, so, you know, laid out in that kind of that respect. You know, in many respects, I actually want to rewatch it again, yeah, just so I can pick up on, you know, the different, you know, challenges and the different, you know, the way she's kind of says words or and how Mildred responds to it, because it's the light and the shadows that I was really drawn to in terms of that performance.
I mean, I know, Clara, I saw you tweeting the other day about the men in this film being ridiculous, and I mean, let's think about this. Wally, yeah, like we say, he's kind of ridiculous, isn't he? Monty's this loafer figure. I mean, what about Bert? I mean, he kind of walks out on Mildred at the start of the film, doesn't he? But is he quite as bad as the other two? I don't know. She kind of reconciles with him a bit at the end, doesn't she?
Yeah, he's not. I wasn't fair to him, I have to say. He's not as bad as the other two. And I think he, for the primary reason that he very clearly picks up on how Mildred treats her daughters and the psychology that Mildred has when it comes to Vida. The fact that Mildred is so obsessed with making Vida love her and appreciate her, and because Vida doesn't like Mildred and doesn't, I think, looks down on her, maybe that's the reason why Mildred is so obsessed and so driven to give Vida everything she wants. I also think that he picks up on the fact that Mildred neglects Kay, her younger daughter, and watching it this time, I sort of wondered if maybe Kay's death was punishment for that. I mean, it's not exactly clear, but there's some early scenes where Kay is coughing, and then, of course, she comes down with pneumonia and then dies. But I thought maybe the sort of initial scenes where she's coughing is to give the viewer a hint that it's not being picked up on by her mother, and her mother's thinking about Vida and worrying about Vida and trying to do this with Vida, and is not paying attention to her younger daughter. And although although Mildred is obviously a more honourable or more, I would say I'd hesitate to say she's a character you can admire, but she's definitely better than Vida. I would say that the two women are actually quite a lot like each other at times, and when they argue with each other, they're very hypocritical, in the sense that they accuse each other of things that they're also, I would say, guilty of. And I think Bert sees that. Bert sort of sees a lot of that before Mildred does, and he also sees it that. I thought it was very honourable and nice of him to question why Mildred was marrying Monty. So he cares about Mildred's happiness even after they've been divorced. So yeah, he's more of an honourable character. It's like he grows throughout the film. He becomes more mature, whereas that doesn't happen to all the other characters, obviously.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the character of Kay, actually, because I forgot about that going back into the film. And what I couldn't quite remember was whether she died or not, because I know she dies in the book. I know she died in the more recent miniseries, but I couldn't remember if they'd changed that for the film. So it's actually quite kind of, I don't know if it's shocking exactly, it's quite surprising, isn't it? That you know, it kind of comes out of nowhere to an extent, unless you've picked up on the cough and so on that Clara refers to. What do you reckon, Nate?
Yeah, it's a little bit like matter of fact, isn't it? Where it's like kind of done and dusted within one scene, you know, like, and then I think Mildred even says, "Oh, I've got to put all my kind of love," or some, I'm maybe paraphrasing here, but yeah, "I've got to put all my love into Vida now. I like subconsciously knew I was going to say it into Vida. I've got to put all my like kind of effort into Vida now. So I think maybe her death is maybe like you say, maybe it's like showing that it doesn't mean as much because she neglects Kay. But sometimes I also think that it's to kind of push Mildred as well into doing all these like making these business decisions, marrying this man she doesn't love, because she's lost one child already and she can't bear to lose, you know, her favourite. That would like kind of devastate her. Yeah, but it's a It's a little bit like kind of a little bit matter of fact, I would call it.
Yeah, well, I suppose it is, because I think the film has to obviously compress the book, and I think in the book you get a lot more about like Mildred's pie making skills and stuff, and I think it's kind of a shame that gets kind of abridged a bit in the film. I don't know, Clara, do you have any more notes that stuff you think we should talk about before we kind of sign off today here? What do you reckon?
So one of the things that I thought when I watched it was that it's quite critical of capitalism, because time and time again Mildred walks away from relationships when they start becoming inconvenient to her financially, and I wondered if anyone else thought it was kind of critical of capitalism, or whether that was just me being like a little like left wing movie viewer.
I certainly picked up a certain little bit of that. I think it was interesting, especially with Monty's, like soon as she became more wealthy than he was, and he was sort of putting her down and saying, like, I don't want your tips, you know, I want a third of your business. And it was almost saw it as like Mildred was attacking his masculinity and what the traditional role stereotype of what men were supposed to do, even though Monty was never good for it. I don't know if anyone else picked up any more stuff on that.
I mean, yeah, you can think of it in terms of capitalism. I think you can think of it in terms of, you know, the framework of the American dream, you know, that's so widely discussed. And there's a quote here from the notes that they provided with the film. Looks like it was written by Alexander Walker from a book about Crawford, I think. You know, so the American dream of providing one's children with greater opportunities for success than one had oneself fell to pieces in Crawford's case the way it did in Mildred's. So what he's kind of saying is, in the film and in Crawford's life, you know, you've got a child driven to like an extreme act of rebellion. So in the film, you know, Vida kind of shoots her lover or whatever. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story about Christina Crawford or not, but she kind of wrote a book about her mother after she died, kind of talking about what she was like as a parent and so on, and not painting a particularly flattering portrait of it. And it's kind of an interesting thing to think about, because we don't know the truth. Kind of what her daughter said is kind of one side of the story. Obviously Joan Crawford's long gone, but I don't know. I mean, in a way this event is not really going into that. It's kind of a celebration of her career, I suppose, but it's one of those issues we always kind of think about with people who are living, isn't it, about off-screen behavior. I don't know, kind of an interesting one to chew over, I suppose. Clara, what do you think?
Watching Mildred Pierce now, knowing that the daughter's written this, whether it's a true account or just her opinion, is God, a little bit ironic, really, isn't it? I mean, it's a little bit sort of weird, I mean, we hope to give our children a better life than we ourselves have had, or give them the things that we haven't had. But Mildred just takes it too far, really, and so what she ends up producing and what she ends up cultivating is a monster. Literally, her daughter is a monster by the end of it. And it's interesting that in the book there is no murder and Vida doesn't actually go to prison, but in 1945, you know, the censors had to have an actual punishment for bad behaviour or immoral behaviour, so they had to put the murder in, and Vida had to go to jail, and that completely changes the story. I think in Mildred Pierce it's a sad story about a mother and a daughter that just are never going to end up having a sort of positive or successful relationship. And the film Mildred Pierce is a much more noir because of the fact that it starts with a murder. So I actually prefer the film to the original story. I like the idea that Mildred tried so hard and ended up producing this like murdering child. It makes it more dramatic, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I like the film better than the story too. I mean, the story's got its virtues, but the film's excellent. And I think I actually really like the miniseries that came out too. But I'll tell you what, I think we should wrap up here because some of us have got like trains to catch and so on. So we don't want to spend all evening podcasting. So let's just quickly go around and see what people are up to. I mean, Nate, last time we spoke, when we were talking about King Kong, you know, and the relaunch of your podcast is kind of still in the works, isn't it?
Still in the works.
So what's the status of Close Encounters of the Film Kind at the minute?
We're still busy recording episodes, busy editing them. So yeah, watch this space. There's still plenty of episodes to catch up on if anyone wants to. There's 16 episodes like in the bank. Just type in Close Encounters of the Film Kind in all good podcast providers. Thank you, Carl, for having me.
My pleasure. And Kelechi, I know you're up to, you know, various things, a bit of blogging, a bit of this, a bit of that. Yeah. So what do you want to say?
You can still find me at confessionsfromageekmind.com and on social media at geekmindUK. Lending my voice and my talents to wherever I can. So this podcast, the X-Cast, and also primarily writing for Set the Tape.
Great stuff. And Clara, we're all waiting for the tales we tell. When is it coming? And how's that going?
It's going really well, yes. Yeah. So we'll be recording our first episode for the tales we tell tomorrow, and that will be out at the beginning of September. So that'll be our first episode. And the second episode, I'm very excited because Kelechi will be joining us as well for that episode. And you can find me at on Twitter at ClaraJeanMC.
Great stuff. Well, guys, it's been a lot of fun today. And I think this was really worth doing. It's kind of a strange way to meet up, isn't it? To go and see a really old melodrama. But it's definitely something I would...
Yeah.
But I definitely recommend it, and hopefully we can do something similar again in the future. But listeners, thanks for joining us today, live from London. I hope you can join me next time. The curtain rises at the Movie Palace.